This morning, as we've heard, Australia will seek a seat on the UN Security Council, which, if successful, would take place, would be on around that table in the year 2029. Speaking to the media in New York a short time ago, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop explained the timing of the bid and also repeated Australia's intention to win a seat on the UN Human Rights Council.
That may seem a long time away, but it is appropriate for us to give notice of our intention to campaign for a seat, because these are highly competitive campaigns and we don't want to spend unnecessary time and resources trying to campaign at an earlier slot. This is the advice our experts at the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade have given us, and we've accepted that advice. And it is about the time frame that we think will give us the opportunity to campaign effectively in a measured way without having to divert unnecessary funds and resources. I will also announce this evening that we intend to seek a seat on the UN Human Rights Council for the period 2018-2020. Australia's not been on the Human Rights Council before, and I think it's appropriate for a nation such as ours that is committed to freedoms, rule of law, human rights and democratic institutions that we stand up and defend our values on the Human Rights Council.
Foreign Minister Julie Bishop speaking just a short time ago to reporters in New York. Well, Tanya Plibersek is Labor's shadow foreign minister. She's also acting opposition leader. She spent the most of the last week in Washington and New York on the sidelines of the 70th UN General Assembly. Tanya Plibersek, welcome to Breakfast.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Does Labor support this second bid for Australia to win a seat on the UN Security Council?
Yeah, look, of course we do. Australia's been on the Security Council five times, I think, since 1946, and Labor's always been a supporter of a multilateral approach to international security and other challenges. We, of course, remember that when Julie Bishop was in opposition, she was not supportive of Labor's bid for the Security Council and not even particularly welcoming when we achieved it. But we're not going to play that same game. Whenever Australia has the opportunity to participate internationally like this, it's a good thing for our international reputation, but I think it's a good thing for the world. I think we do well on these organisations.
And I think everyone saw that as Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop was a very enthusiastic, energetic participant in the UN. And now she's also announced that Australia is bidding for a seat on the Human Rights Council. This has never happened before. Are we seeing a sort of a new sign of engagement, do you think, from the coalition government with the UN?
Well, I think
And do you welcome that?
Well, of course we welcome it. I mean, they were very critical of our attempt to win the UN Security Council seat, but I'm glad they made an effort once it was won to participate. I think if you see what happened when MH17 was downed, it was a very important thing for Australia to have an international platform like that to say that the perpetrators of that terrible act should be held to account. We would never criticise the government for saying that Australia should play a greater international role. I think it surprises me a little bit that, we're talking about 14 years, 15 years from now. That seems a little unambitious to me, but we're not going to criticise the government for saying that we should take on a greater international responsibility. We're good at it. We bring something to the world when we do it.
It's becoming clear, has become clear, I think, over the last few days in New York, that the West is pivoting on Syria. Leaders no longer insisting that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad be removed as any part of an immediate political solution. Rather, it's clear that countries need to work with him and his ally, Russia, in defeating ISIS. Does Labor support this pivot?
Well, I think we have to be very careful about what we're signing up to here. If we take a step back and think, what would the people of Syria want? They would certainly want an end to the fighting. They would certainly want much greater humanitarian assistance. They would certainly want to be safe from Daesh and the 1,000 or so other groups that we believe have sprung up on the ground there. But they would also, I think, to a large degree, want to be safe from the Assad regime, which of course has killed more than 200,000 of its own people. So there are, all different regional interests. We've got Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Russia, the US a little bit further afield. All of them basically have a dog in the fight. what we need to make sure we're doing is going back to what the people of Syria need, and in the short term, those international players, the regional ones and further afield, will certainly have an influence in bringing a political solution. In the long term, as Russia says, the Assad government is the only legitimate government of Syria. I think there'd be a lot of Syrians who would disagree with that.
Yes, but a political solution has evaded the world, and the people of Syria, I think, have felt really abandoned by the international players, because there has been real no concerted effort to try and end this civil war. Now, Julie Bishop has rationalised any change by saying there are differing degrees of evil, and ISIS is the most evil of all. As you mentioned, Assad's army has killed hundreds of thousands of people. I think it's currently killing seven times more civilians than ISIS. But, you know, is this the only game in town at the moment?
Well, I wouldn't say it that way. I'd say that it might be necessary in the short term to have a transition that involves the Assad government. The proposition that this is acceptable long-term to the people of Syria, I just don't think is correct. And what we would have to be very careful of is agreeing to an interim arrangement that becomes a permanent arrangement because Russia and others continue to back the Assad regime. I would say, Fran, the trouble with a lot of this discussion is that we're having it across the newspapers and across radio bulletins. Our Parliament has not had a proper debate about what Australia's role and position should be in this conflict. I've said from the very beginning that our role should be primarily humanitarian. One of the reasons that the people of Syria feel abandoned is because they have been by the international community. I've actually seen the World Food Programme, tiny amount of money that they were getting per person in the refugee camps in the countries of first asylum, cut from $30 a month to, more recently I heard reported, $13.50 a month to survive on for food. The reason that there are so many people fleeing to Europe is because they fear that they will not last another winter. So Australia's role should be primarily humanitarian. We should be in international discussions about transitional arrangements. But any suggestion that the international community now feels that a government that has murdered more than 200,000 of its own citizens is the only legitimate government, I would deal with that very, very cautiously indeed.
It's 14 past eight. Our guest is Tanya Plibersek, Shadow Foreign Minister, Acting Opposition Leader. Tanya Plibersek, much of the talk at in New York at the UN and around the corridors and the side summits at the UN has been around the protection and advancement of women and girls. There have been reports this week, a report on 7:30 this week, of more abuses on refugees, female refugees on Nauru, the alleged rape of three women refugees have been resettled in Nauru. Now, Labor supports offshore detention and the stance that none of the people declared to be refugees will be settled in Australia. Are you comfortable supporting a policy which leaves women stranded in a country that is undergoing massive judicial upheaval, government upheaval, and is clearly leaving women, female refugees, in harm's way?
I am deeply concerned about these most recent reports, and I think that the government should be held fully accountable for the way that both Nauru and Manus Island are being run. We have heard reports, not just on Nauru, but also on Manus, of violence against inmates. They should be fully investigated, and anybody accused of such a crime should be fully held to account.
But held to account where? Because what we've heard is that the judicial system and the policing system in Nauru is not up to this task. I mean, is it time for Labor to join the Greens and others to say women and women who are declared to be refugees should be, if they can't go anywhere else, should be brought out of Nauru to Australia?
Well, I think the first step is to make sure that people are do have full recourse to the law, and Australia is the funder of these institutions, camps, should have an arrangement with the government of Nauru and, of course, with the authorities on Manus Island to make sure that any claims like this are fully investigated and that if people are guilty, they are completely, fully held to account, and that the victims are given proper support. There is no question that the way that these institutions are being run is unacceptable. to Australians and to the international community. I believe the government should answer for any of these allegations, no question.
Can I just ask you finally, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop was targeted by Labor yesterday for bringing her partner, David Panton, into a session at the UN General Assembly, sitting next to her at the table. We understand David Panton paid his own airfare and accommodation, was a guest of Julie Bishop, who said that in the past she has brought friends and constituents into the Assembly Hall. This time David Panton was in there, I think, to hear the Pope's address. Do you have an issue with this? Is there anything wrong with this?
I think it's very surprising indeed. I mean, the proper people to be in there at the time are the Minister and the Ambassador to the United Nations, government members, senior officials. I've got no objection to him accompanying her on the trip. I think that that has happened in the past. But usually a guest would be seated in the visitors' area rather than, it's like taking a guest chambers of parliament. You wouldn't normally have them sitting there next to you, I would imagine. So I am a little bit surprised. Certainly we wouldn't have been surprised if we'd been sitting in the visitors area, but it is a little bit of an odd look to have someone who's not a member of parliament or an official of the Department of Foreign Affairs or a related organisation. Sure.
Tanya Plibersek, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Fran.
Tanya Plibersek is Shadow Foreign Minister and Acting Opposition Leader. It's 8:17.